Good evening. This is Mae Brussel. This is broadcast number 741, February the 17th, 1986. The program is titled World Watchers. It is a one-hour analysis printed sheet, not the transcript of the broadcast, but the bibliography for the sources of information. Write to me. Send a self-addressed stamped envelope to P.O. Box 22511 Carmel 93923. I talk very rapidly. I assume that my long listeners know the names I'm talking about. For new listeners, I don't expect you to remember the names, but you can look up the sources of information and check them out. And I suggest that you do that. And if you have any questions about them, after you've done that, tape these broadcasts off the air, because as I say, they go very fast. Play them back again over and over. Read the bibliography sheet, and if you have any problems, you can always telephone and ask me about them, and I'll clarify what I believe on these matters and where I'm getting my information from. Now, my concern and reason for studying all this material was that when President John Kennedy was murdered November 22nd, 1963, I was afraid that we had a military coup in this country, and I believe now, and always did, that this is in fact what happened, and the CIA had a history of effecting coups. Their first was unsuccessful in Albania. The next in Iran was successful from their point of view, not the people in Iran when they put the Shah in and got rid of Mr. Mossadegh, and then went on to Nicaragua, and the rest is history. You can read books such as Endless Enemies and see what the CIA has done. Jonathan Quitney wrote it. Okay. But now you can get out your scoreboard and see that fascism or military dictatorships are not very popular with the people, that the people are catching on. And one of the things I believe is changing their minds is, it sounds silly, the means of communication, specifically the tape cassette. A friend of mine traveled to Africa and Central America, China, the Soviet Union in the 70s, early 70s, and told me, put your material on cassette. It travels. They have cheap Japanese little machines, even on the backs of camels, he told me. And, of course, cassette tapes were the thing that got rid of the Shah of Iran, not the Savak holding there, not the CIA, not our money invested in that fascist family, but the education of the middle classes and the realization that they had the control over them, of America specifically, and the American war machine. That when the war was over, instead of Hitler saying, I control the world, the Germans and the Americans combined and started to do it together, and have thought, for until recently, I'm sure that they were successful, but there is a turning point. Now, the reason I bring that up is because of the election in Portugal this week, where the veteran socialist leader Mario Soares won the election. He's the first elected civilian president in 60 years. The military dictator was expected to win, and of course, our establishment newspaper said he was the favorite. Well, he's the favorite of them, not the people. Soares is the first civilian head of state since President Machado resigned after a military coup in 1926. That was a time period where Mussolini was developing his muscles, when Franco was getting ready to move into Spain, into that dictatorship. The Civil War took place in 36, but the rumblings in Europe were getting ready for the dictators, and Hitler, Germany was rearming from 1919, and 1926 was a time period where hundreds of political people in Germany were being murdered, getting ready for the Fuhrer in 1933. So for 46 years, they had a right-wing dictatorship, and the tide has turned. Now, in the past several years, while I've been doing these, I've been on the air 15 years, but in the past several years, we have seen administrations, governments fall, where our administrations have put in power and supported, such as Argentina, a democracy there. These are all weak. The cabinet and the intelligence systems aren't totally changed, but there is a change, and I mentioned it. Argentine is dealing with those 30 to 50,000 people that were murdered. There are 30,000 missing. Peru has had a change in government. Bolivia got rid of Klaus Barbie and the cocaine kings. Brazil got rid of the dictatorship we put in 1964. Guatemala got rid of the one we put in the 50s. And 600 of the military police were arrested this week. Iran got rid of Shah and the Pahlavi and the Nazi connections of the Pahlavis through World War II. Nicaragua got rid of American Somoza, who went to West Point, put in by the CIA. Haiti got rid of their Papa Doc, who was funded by the United States. Greece got rid of the military junta and put in Papandreou. The Philippines is toppling. They can't deal, the United States can't deal with Marcos because the country will go communist if we don't support a moderate, the handwriting is on the wall, military dictatorships are out. Now, this is quite a victory, and for those dumpkins that wouldn't vote in this last election or the election before or the one before that, who go for the Libertarian Party, for the splinter groups, the Peace and Freedom, and splinter off instead of all uniting to get rid of Richard Nixon or Ronald Reagan, soon in this country, the people will have to unite and get rid of our military dictatorships. The Philippines is on the way out. The election in France is in March. We'll see what Mr. Mitterrand can do or how he can hold his own. Just recently, it came out that the AFL-CIO was pouring money to the right wing through Mr. Brown, the same group that put in the organized crime and mafia to hold down the leftists of the organizers and went with the Nazis and the fascists after World War II. They've been exposed, the CIA pouring money there. The dictatorships that haven't been overthrown, the most notorious, are the United States with warmonger Ronald Reagan representing everything that the Defense Department wants, and the incorporated powers that be that came from Germany after World War II, working with the Defense Department and the Eastern European disposed who want a war to get back their territory. Taiwan and the Chang family hold on pretty tight. South Korea is having demonstrations. Their people are protesting. They have surrounded the candidate who would run against the president again, who went back to Korea. He's literally locked up again. So that's getting very shaky. Saudi Arabia has a feudal family. It's not a military dictatorship. And Chile has Pinochet, who we put into power. So the next countries to go and change, hopefully, will be the United States, Taiwan, Chile, and South Korea. The Saudi Arabians have their own problems because as the bankruptcy of each of these military dictatorships has taken place and what we call capitalism or arms, money, arms against communism didn't work at all. It went into the hands of people who've put the money into Swiss banks and run. We will see that when there's prices drop in oil or a huge amount of oil flooding the market, it will affect the Saudi family. And they have, of course, worked with our country and tried to have a monopoly on energy to keep us bound to their particular prices. Now, Ronald Reagan's speech, the State of the Union, that I just briefly want to mention, and most of this program in next week's is going to be on the State of the Union Part 3. There were three areas of his speech that were terribly important. Forget the family, the schools, the prayer in school, the abortion position, and all the usual blah blahs. His speech is like a code. It took months to write. It was written between the summer and when he gave it in February, supposedly January 28th, but moved up 1 week. And that was important to illustrate how intense the speech really was by the contents and what he presented the next day in the budget package. But the speech emphasized for me three things. Weapons, Star Wars, Space Shuttle, the warfare state comes first. He allowed himself the luxury of 1 week timing before the hard knocks of where your money was going to go or your debts are going. And by having the Space Shuttle take off and then explode, his speech on humanizing space to give him the luxury of separating it from the warfare contracts and desires, crunched them closer together. He wanted to talk about American family, but 50% of the American family is broken, and he will tighten the domestic budget, of course. So weapons, Star Wars, and weapon contracts. If you need the statistics, I can cite them, but the articles are outrageous, and they're charted very well, particularly in papers like the Washington Post and the New York Times. Now, the second thing Reagan wanted, and he brought up in his speech, had the same disguise as the teacher in space for humanizing space while it is going 100% for warfare. He wants to tell you that someday you can have a 2-hour ride to Tokyo. The president is a travel broker at this point. What he didn't tell you, but which was exposed, of course, was that the hypersonic transport is almost totally a military weapon. He wants Congress, our representatives, to spend $500 million within the next 3 years just to study that war machine that the Pentagon thinks it needs. Then he wants between $2 billion and $3 billion to test that weapon because the Air Force and the Pentagon want faster fighter airplanes, and that's what it's about. If you wondered why he wanted you to get to Tokyo in 2 hours, you can't even afford to get across town to the theater and back and be mugged besides. So forget his desire to give you a quick trip or a quick fix. He wants you to pay for this because the Pentagon wants it. So the Star Wars and the weapons was part biggest part of the budget hunk that is going to the warfare machine and was close to the heart of his speech of what he really thinks about us. The hypersonic transport was the second part. And the third part of Reagan's speech about AIDS, those three things are very significant. This disease could be killing 1/3 of the population in 25 years. It's a sleeper because it's dormant for so long. It can be a weapon, a use of genocide, a weapon of hysteria, and it has moved now. The contracts for AIDS go to the Pentagon and the Defense Department, and the same people who have an arsenal of biological and chemical warfare tests, including those in agriculture, such as Dr. Lawrence Layton, remember of Jonestown, whose wife helped fund Jim Jones. He was in charge of the Dugway, Utah, the testing there, and biological chemical warfare, and then he went into the Agricultural Department in California. Reagan talks about the family. He's talking about the heterosexual family. AIDS hits the homosexual. It also can affect the blacks who have many broken families, the Chicano and Mexican who have too many in the family, the gays, the artists, writers, dancers, the non-establishment that Ronald Reagan hates so much. So three items of his budget and his speech coming one day apart stand out. Now, three events are taking place simultaneously in the news that are very important. The most important events, I believe, are, one, the escalation of the weapon contracts. The meeting with Mr. Gorbachev is a total fraud. We are heading directly for World War III. Second, the Advanced Genetic Scientists, the company that says on their brochures and articles, we're located in Oakland. They are a company whose money comes from Sweden, from Belgium, with scientists from Germany, money from Roman Haas. 1/4 of it is from Roman Haas, which is directly linked to IG Farben and the European Combine, who want to test for the first time in the world, first time anywhere in the world, live alder genetic bacteria in frost-free Monterey County, where it could affect the immune system of the weak, the elderly, the workers, if they're weak, and they are 100% Mexican-Americans, who could contact systems that would affect them 4 to 5 years from now. They could work hard and drop dead, and it would affect the weak ones. Now, that kind of thinking is not far-fetched. It was done at DORA, at Puntamund, where the rocket scientists, the same people who made designs for our space shuttles and Star Wars and atomic bombs in Germany, used these scientists, these professors, the renowned physicists, used laborers until they were dead. Then they brought new ones to work until they died. Then we brought the scientists to the United States and Germany and brought them through Paperclip to work with our space agencies down at Muscle Shoals, Alabama, in Texas, and all over where the defense are made, in Lockheed, in California, in Florida, Mississippi. The defense industry is made up by over 500 to 600 of the Project Paperclip scientists who were not bashful about using slave labor and killing them. And the third factor that's the most important that relates to those other two, as I say, is the disease AIDS. Now, the president didn't talk about AGS, but there are memos that I want to share with you. The president ordered the speed up, the White House ordered the speed up of the genetic altered bacteria. They're directly involved in pushing this program. So it's interesting that the White House got involved with AGS, and now the White House is involved very much so in his speech, and with the funds in the disease AIDS that could wipe out one-third or two-thirds of Black Africa, large segments of the population. William Colby, the director of the CIA, formerly was in Vietnam in the Phoenix program, where he admittedly killed 30 to 40,000 people, really for no reason, as an operation to clean out the villages. We didn't win the war anyway, but as reward for doing that was to become CIA director, later linked to the mysterious Nguyen Han Bank and the interconnecting links to Task Force 157, another killer team headed by Henry Kissinger. The William Colby, who became the CIA director, spoke at the Commonwealth Club in San Francisco a few years ago. And again, all of this comes back to California, California agriculture, California teams working on these things, California scientists. Colby told them that the biggest threat to the United States isn't the Soviet Union, but 30 to 40 million Mexicans. So if all our weapons and billions of dollars of money is going into weapons to fight the Soviet Union, then millions and millions must be going to do a form of genocide to get rid of 30 or 40 million specific mouths to feed. And if he cites Mexicans in California, I'm sure he must cite Blacks in Africa and elsewhere around the world. Now, there is a common denominator or common denominators, plural, between the aerospace industry, between used aircraft and Lockheed and Paperclip, with advanced genetic scientists through their links to the DuPont Corporation, DuPont to Roman Haas with their connections to IG Farben. And what I'm going to do this week and next week is to talk about the common denominators between the AIDS, the Reagan section of his speech on AIDS, the program that suggested to go into effect by the military, the relationship of those to other factors that are currently taking place, the space shuttle, the testing in the space shuttle for AIDS, the relationship of them to Johnson & Johnson, the company that is now troubled again by the Tylenol scare, their biggest competitor being IG Farben's Sterling Drugs, and the relationship of these various organizations, as I say, to AGS, to space, to Tylenol, and to research of blood on the space shuttle that would affect the immune system and cancer and AIDS. There is a relationship between all of these, and I want to get into that for most of the program of this week and next week. Before I do that, I suppose those of you who listen every week or subscribe to the tapes couldn't fail to notice the articles in yesterday's newspaper and today's newspaper on the decision of the commission investigating the space shuttle explosion to remove from their hearings or decision-making policies those people who said, take the shuttle and launch in cold weather. You remember 2 weeks ago that I cited the date of the president's speech before the Congress that would include Christa McAuliffe and that would give him 1 week space between the State of the Union message that would call attention to those other factors I've talked about. And many of the items I talked about last week and the week before I will update for you. But the many articles on the cold you've seen, and they've been repeated over and over in the newspapers. The launch, the shuttle actually stayed on that pad for 32 days, and there was freezing temperature more than the night before, but it was very cold the night before. A lot of the articles on the cold affecting the space shuttle, both the fuel and the rocket fuel, the solid fuel, and the seams rupturing, or the ice breaking off the tiles. Those three things, the ice effects, the fuel, the seams, and the tiles, had information on the temperatures that NASA refused to give, but will have to give to the hearings. They're being so childish. The low of one article was 38 degrees low when the shuttle was delayed that morning, early morning, and 51 when it launched. Another was 24 low and a probably 55. They put probably because they knew that was an outright lie. Another low was 24, high 38. Another 24 and a high 30. Another 24, high 32. But the variance, both of those kinds of variances, all are too low for the space shuttle to have gone off 2 hours after the first delay. The Monterey Herald had a story yesterday. NASA agrees to remove the key officials from the inquiry. And I won't do too much of that because that's a national story, and I'm sure most of you have seen it. But they're removing anyone from the investigation, from the panel, who made a decision in launching the aircraft because the process of the decision may have been flawed because of the going in the cold weather, that the checks along the road that led to the final decision to go ahead with the launch on a cold, frosty morning have to be analyzed, and the commission has to remove those people, officials like Jesse Moore, launch operator director Bob Siak, launch director Gene Thomas, and Arnold Aldrich, director of the Space Transportation System, all played key roles in the launch control. Now, another article in the San Francisco Chronicle cited a different man, added to the list, Richard Smith, director of Kennedy Space Center. Smith is the man that I cited who said they thought it was fairly safe. And Moore was the one who said on Sunday, I'm not going to be jeopardized. We've always had a successful launch. Nobody's going to pressure me. And then he took credit the very first day. I made the decision to launch. And 1 week later, he said, we made it or they made it. So that these teams have been removed from the decision-making process. The Monterey Herald this morning had some more on that story, that Mort and Thea Call engineers were concerned about the low temperature that would degrade the seals. And you've heard plenty about that, that they would leak through the rocket segments. And Commission Chairman William Rogers told reporters that his panel will focus on the Wright booster because the cold weather on launch day was the possible cause of this disaster. And Lawrence Molloy, NASA's booster project manager, testified about Mort and Thea Call, who makes the booster rockets, cautioned against the launch on the 28th because of frigid temperature that went from 24 and it was 38 degrees at liftoff. That's what he says it was. And Rockwell International, that built the shuttle, was afraid of tear that icicles on the pad would make and drop when the icicles would drop off, it would affect the tiles and the heat when they went up and re-entered. So that various reasons and fear of the weather are important, but this commission appointed by the president didn't intend to go into this adversarial position. And that was mentioned in the San Francisco Chronicle, that there are changes of tone. Now, that isn't thanks to William Rogers. The very first day, as I say, he had a public hearing to say weather isn't a factor, but there was a very curious member of the commission from Caltech in California, a Nobel laureate, who proceeded to go with an arrow right to the heart, Mr. Fenman, and asked about the weather and kept it on. So a 13-member team of astronauts and prestigious people didn't do what Reagan wanted. So now the tone of the investigation has changed, and the Chronicle said when Reagan appointed them, it seemed that they would work in concert, both NASA and the investigators, as they tried to explain a seemingly inexplicable malfunction of well-tested equipment. Now, after a week of testimony that called into question how much the agency knew about the fatal weakness in key parts, they suddenly became more adversarial, and that's the way it's going to be. In the end, NASA said that some noses will be out of joint. Okay, not NASA, but the commission said NASA will be defensive and some noses will be out of joint, but it is clear that it's got to be somewhat adversarial. Somewhat. Now, the important issue here, and I bring it up, not only did I figure all of this out within 2 hours of the launch, and I'm not a space scientist, but just given the 2 hours after it launched and failed, and listening to the news and hearing what I did early in the morning, how it was scrubbed early in the morning and canceled, I could figure this out. But if the noses are out of joint, the question is, will the part below the noses, specifically the mouths, begin to talk? Did those people at NASA get instructions from Washington, from the Defense Department, from Daniel Graham, from Mr. Richard Pearl, from those people that wanted to launch this thing that day, the day of the president's speech, have space between it and the budget the following week, who needed Kristen McAuliffe to hide what they were doing with the Star Wars defense system taking over NASA, the defense moving in and taking over NASA. Will those mouths talk? That is a question we don't know. It could Watergate the president, and we'll see what happens, even if it's intentional to do that, to get him out, to get George Bush in, because it is a time where he will be pretty secure, or thinks he is, before the next election, just as they tried with Gerry Ford and hoped that he'd win, but he didn't win that next election. Just as this conflict of Lee Iacocca, there's talk that he was removed from the Committee of the Statue of Liberty to be active the way he has been in the past because he would put up too much opposition to George Bush, that they want to run for president, and having a successful several years to redo the lady out there welcoming our strangers from Europe, or not our strangers, our new citizens. They removed Iacocca now because in July Reagan was going to make a big thing out of the celebration, and there would be less chance if we have a hero of the Democratic Party such as Iacocca, who's no saint and also a no knight. He's a knight of Malta, allegiance to the Vatican, but he's still a threat to George Bush. And so there are a lot of games played in Washington all the time. You have to know the minds of the players doing it. Now, in the category of the president's speech, I'm going to discuss AIDS specifically and its relationship to various things that are in the news today or from the past that tie together the space shuttle, the AIDS experiments, the advanced genetic scientists, the common denominator between the Defense Department, biological warfare, the disease AIDS, and the president's bringing up AIDS at this time when he was giving his speech, and the implications of what the president really meant. Because I won't have time in this remaining half hour or this program this evening, I'm going to continue, of course, with this next week and go along the individual articles that I'm just going to cite as references now so that you get an outline of what I'm leading to. And then many of the details I'll share with you later. I think it's more important right now to get an overview of what I'm trying to say because it isn't very easy to understand if it is the first time you're thinking or hearing about it, but it's easy to understand as individual problems or articles, and I want to whip them up as a fabric or a cloth that is coming together at this time, which is the ultimate extension of fascism, which is specifically ready for the next war and genocide of mass populations through a specific disease, and the involvement of the very people making the war being involved in the disease in particular, not being removed from the disease. So I'm going to cite certain articles or events, run them through for you, and maybe just take one specific article to dwell on if I have enough time, and I hope I have time for that. The first one was the State of the Union message, as I say, where the president was talking about AIDS and the necessity for funding of AIDS research for stopping AIDS, or he calls it a cure. The cure, in his mind, is to isolate, I'm sure, the people who have it, not necessarily to get rid of the disease as quickly as to remove those people and begin thinking of removing masses of population as a threat to our security and other people's security. So the State of the Union message was the first item of AIDS that caught my interest at this time, although there has been Pentagon millions put aside for AIDS earlier. The second is an article in the San Francisco Chronicle, February the 9th. It's called Drastic Measures, and it has to do with AIDS. The title of the article is Drastic Measures in a Disputed AIDS Study. Now, what's so scary about this article, and I'm going to share it with you, is the money coming from the Pentagon and from Fort Detrick, Maryland, and from Stanford Research, the very areas that are very close to Ronald Reagan here in California, and that have to do with chemical biological warfare. This is a horrendous long article. The third is the expose that I had on World Watchers 2 or 3 years ago of the plans of at Fort Detrick, Maryland, the same place it would be working in this other chemical biological warfare group. trying to get rid of the elderly and the debilitated by spreading viruses again in the Bay Area in San Francisco, which has a large AIDS amount of AIDS right now and homosexual population. And along with that, refer again to the book, The Higher Form of Killing, published in 1984 or 85, on the Pentagon's intentions to create a bacteria that would affect the immune system out of, again, Fort Detrick, Maryland. And fifth, a plan presented the day after the president's speech for $213 million for AIDS to be put under one agency, similar to Nazi Germany, where one body would be responsible for all of this money to study AIDS. I'll take a one-minute break and then come back to continuing the outline of some material I put together.